Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and Pedaling Innovations, and welcome to another edition of the Bike James Podcast. In this podcast, I am interviewing Drs. Robin and Marty Hughes. They own a website devoted to foot health. It's called naturalfootgear.com, and I got them on the podcast because they are also avid cyclists. And I wanted to get them on to talk about the foot and foot health and what happens when we don't respect the foot and some of the things that we unknowingly do both to the foot and to the body without knowing some of these things. And, you know, like I mentioned in the interview with them, the cycling world is really in the dark ages when it comes to the feet and how they function and how to best apply that to the bike, and we unknowingly create a lot of problems when we do that. And you know, especially with clipless pedals and those really stiff clipless pedal shoes, we end up not only decreasing people's performance, believe it or not, but also increasing the chance of overuse injuries down the road. And so what we do is we get in the interview, we discuss, you know, what is natural foot health, what are some good ways for people who may not have been exposed to this to start applying this stuff both to their daily lives and also to their riding and making sure that they're getting the most out of their bodies on their bike and also setting themselves up for longevity. Because, you know, again, if you really love riding and you want to be doing this for a long time, then making sure that you're doing the things now that will keep your body healthy and functioning well for years to come is really important. And a lot of that starts with your feet. And so again, it was a great conversation. I really had a lot of fun talking to them, learned a lot, but so we will get to it.
Kind of set it up for everybody listening. Robin and Marty, Dr. Robin Hughes and Dr. Marty Hughes are joining me. They run a website called naturalfootgear.com. And Robin's a naturopathic physician and Marty's a chiropractic physician. And both of them have a really deep understanding and just, you know, I guess kind of care, for lack of a better word, about the foot and how the foot's supposed to function and how, when it's not functioning well, how it can affect a lot of other things. And so we actually got hooked up with, they contacted me with the Catalyst pedal and just kind of recognize some of the things that I was talking about as a fellow barefoot training, barefoot running advocate, just recognize some of the things that I was talking about, and yeah, that makes sense. And so they've actually been a really big help in me spreading the word and getting the word out to other riders, especially road riders, because Robin's a road cyclist. You know, she does some mountain biking, but that's road riding's for one of her big passions. And so yeah, it's been cool to get someone who rides a road bike who understands that, you know, that's funny. I get a lot of questions from people like, what about a road bike? Does the same thing count on a road bike? And it's like, yes, why would it be different? But sometimes having to explain that to people is part of the thing that we have to do. So, but anyways, I wanted to just kind of set up for people, you know, who, you know, where you guys were coming at this from. And then, yeah, just kind of give you guys a chance to tell me your story. And I'm actually really excited to learn some more about you guys, because it's just, you know, really cool to see people that get it from, like, how important the foot is and making good choices for the foot. And so I'm excited to kind of learn more about what you guys are doing and some of your insights to it. So I guess with all that said, just kind of setting things up, tell me a little bit about your guys' background, like kind of what – you know, what kind of got you into, you know, helping people through your chosen path in the first place, and then kind of, you know, what led you guys, you know, was there like an aha moment for each of you that was like, oh man, the foot's really important, it kind of led you down this road? Just, yeah, kind of how'd you guys get to this point of running this website and really being advocates for foot health?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks for the introduction there. You know, I mean, when I look back on it now, we kind of stumbled upon it, so to speak. I'd say it all started, I was in my final year at naturopathic medical school, and as part of our degree program, we have to do rotations with naturopathic docs as well as with other doctors. And during this time, I had the incredibly good fortune to do a rotation or a preceptorship with Dr. Ray McClanahan, who's a sports podiatrist in Portland, Oregon, where I was living, where Marty was living as well. And that's where it started. It just started out as a rotation that I, you know, had to just get some hours. But what happened was I was just entranced with Dr. McClanahan's practice. So I'd have to introduce Dr. McClanahan a little bit. So he's a sports podiatrist in Portland who practices a bit unconventionally from most podiatrists, in that his entire focus is around helping rehabilitate the foot to function the way nature intended it to, and he's kind of centered his whole practice around that. Anyways, long story short, it was incredible practice. It was amazing to see his patients get better. He worked mainly with runners, but also cyclists and hikers and walkers. And so his patients were all just getting better, just by getting their foot to do what it's supposed to do. So I guess that's where it started. Is I just thought his practice was really cool. Dr. McClanahan invited me to stay on after I graduated, which I was really excited to do. And so I just ended up staying on with him for a few years, seeing patients with him, learning from him. Marty too, you know, Marty was a chiropractor, and and I was telling him about all this stuff. He thought it was really neat too. So that's kind of where it started. Was just thought his practice was neat, seeing people get better made a lot of sense, and kind of evolved from there. Marty and I went on to start our own practices, and we were kind of doing general medicine, but we found that every time somebody would schedule with a foot problem, we both kind of thought, yes, we know what to do here, we know how to help. And so, yeah, a few years later, we finally realized that's really where we should focus our efforts. So fast forward a few years, we live in Asheville, North Carolina. I've started a foot-specific practice, and sorry, this is probably getting a bit long, so.
No, it's great. I love long answers to questions, so no.
No worries. Feel free to cut me off or edit as needed, but.
It's good.
Okay, right on. So, I just had this practice, and one day I came home and I said, Marty, my visits with patients are so long because I'm trying to explain so many natural foot health concepts to them, and I give everyone handouts, but it's so much to remember, and I wish there was a resource for them to come back to. Hey, will you build a website just with some of this information so that patients could refer back to it? And Marty said, sure, I can do that. I have iWeb, you know. So we started this very simple, rudimentary site with just just kind of some of the stuff that we had on our handouts, basic concepts, just ways to help some of the common foot problems, bunions, hammer toes, plantar fasciosis, things like that. And then Marty thought, hey, there's some products that we're always suggesting to patients, things like toe spacers and metatarsal pads and certain footwear. I can just make those available on the site. And I said, that's a nice idea. Then people don't have to come into the clinic because we keep odd hours and sometimes we run out of stuff. So that's where Natural Foot Gear was born. It was supposed to be a resource for patients. And more people started finding it, and it grew, and over the years it's just grown into a bigger thing. We started putting more and more information on there, just everything we could think of we knew about feet and natural foot health we put on the site, and it just grew from there, and now it's both of our full-time gigs.
That's awesome. I mean, it's I like stories like that where you're creating something to kind of fill. You're like looking around going like, man, I wish this was available to me. And then, well, I guess I'm going to have to make it kind of thing. So, that's cool. So as far as with the foot health, stuff goes, you said you were, kind of explain a lot of the same stuff. One of the things that spawned the website was that just to kind of give people a reference to the things that you're telling them. What are some of the, I guess, kind of the common things that you're talking to people about? I guess, kind of common misconceptions about foot health, kind of the common problems that you see people having, you know, just kind of from, you know, for some people listening to this, they may not even have an idea. Like, I know for me, one of my big aha moments was I was driving, you know, cross country to California for something, and I was listening to the book Born to Run. And I'd always been into barefoot training just from some of my influences, but, you know, I had this big, when I was listening to that, I'm like, man, if we're screwing people's feet up with big, crazy athletic footwear, and I'm thinking back to, like, my, when I ran track and them telling me, oh, man, you're going to need to get an orthotics because your knees hurt so bad and stuff like that, and I'm like, man, is my footwear screwing me up? And then I started thinking, like, man, what are we doing to people's feet cycling with the kind of footwear? And then, you know, and then just kind of that, you know, just, so anyways, I guess, you know, what are some of the things that people may not even realize they're, you know, kind of dealing with or want to keep an eye on?
Yeah, that's a big question and a great question.
It's a really great question. And, I'm glad you mentioned Born to Run. That was, you know, kind of introduced as we were heading into this field, into natural foot health. Dr. McClanahan had kind of been talking about a lot of the concepts explored in that book for quite a while before it came out, and passed it on to us. And it was just nice to see something come out that was kind of in the mainstream, that was talking about these ideas. And I think one of the big things that people don't understand about feet, or the big misconception out there, is that the feet are inherently flawed, and that we need to do a bunch of things to them to make them better, you know, when in fact what we really need to do in most cases is remove impediments that we've put in place.
Right. So just to, like, to give an example, and I'm sure you've seen this so much in your coaching and what you do, James, is just, you know, people come to you and think, well, or they'll tell you, you know, I have flat feet, or I have high arches, or I need support. I mean, that's one of the huge misconceptions that we hear all the time. It's my feet need to be supported. I need arch support. I need good protection under my feet, and so on. I mean, I too heard this all growing up. I was a runner and was told, you know, my whole life, oh, I have flat feet. I need orthotics. I need different shoes, all this stuff. And you know, so I know why that's a misconception, because that's what we all hear from shoe stores, from coaches, from the medical community. We just keep hearing that over and over again. Our feet are flawed and they need to be fixed with, you know, technology. And so I think that is one of the huge misconceptions. And I think something that Born to Run did such a great job of bringing to light is that maybe we are all actually born with excellent feet that are perfectly designed from birth to withstand walking, running, hiking, dancing, cycling, all the stuff that we want to do, and they don't need all this stuff. And in fact, most of the times this stuff just gets in the way and causes problems rather than helping them.
Yeah, one of our favorite quotes comes from Dr. William Ross. He's kind of the founding father of natural foot health movement, and it kind of goes along the lines of the less you do to the foot, the more you do for the foot. And so that's what we try and respect in natural foot gear. We try and get people to rehabilitate their feet, to kind of restore the natural foot form, both in the way the foot looks and the function of the foot. And so that's really our main goal.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I kind of want to dig into that a little bit, because I've seen that quite a bit, you know, especially with mountain bikers, long-time mountain bikers, long-time clipless pedal riding mountain bikers coming into my facility, and their feet just don't work. They're so, they don't, you know, like you said, like, they don't look right, they don't move right, and it's this convenient excuse on some level for them to not be able to then move correctly. And so you know, so like you're saying, like, we kind of get these convenient excuses that people who don't know how to fix these problems will throw out there. And so, you know, for someone who has, you know, had a lot of time with poor footwear, or, you know, especially, you know, riders listening to this who spent a lot of time in those tight clipless pedal shoes, you know, and then have actually had, like, some, you know, structural changes and issues with their foot because of that, What are some of the common things that you see, and what are some of the solutions that they can use to actually start to change the foot back in the other direction where it's functioning better?
Okay, yeah, another great question. So I think, as you well know, cycling shoes are so rigid and they're so uncomfortable. I think road biking shoes are terrible offenders, maybe even worse than mountain biking shoes, although mountain biking shoes are problematic as well. Some of the biggest problems with cycling shoes and shoes in general that we see is that they elevate the heel. They spring the toes upward from the support surface, something called toe spring. They're very narrow. They push the toes together into a wedge. These are all things that we try to tell folks to avoid in footwear in general, and certainly that pertains to cycling as well. To answer your question of what are some of the problems we see, and this is true in general and in cycling, heel pain, ball of foot pain, hot spots, numbness, neuromas, plantar fasciosis, or as a lot of people call it, plantar fasciitis, which is a little bit of a misnomer. We can get into that.
I love
another time. but to summarize, heel pain, ball of foot pain, numbness, by extension, a lot of people don't necessarily relate this to their feet, but knee pain, hip pain, a lot of that can come from the feet. Many times it does.
A lot of passive toe deformity, what we call passive toe deformities, too. Things like bunions, overlapping toes, crooked toes.
Hammer toes.
Yeah, just a variety of crooked toes.
What do you suggest for stuff like that, like the crooked toes?
Well, we've had a lot of success in the patients we've seen and from our customers as well through using a toe spacing device. And the one that we typically recommend is called Correct Toes, and that was actually invented by Dr. McClanahan in Portland. And so it's just a device that slots down in between the toes and spaces the toes in an anatomical way so that the toes are realigned with their corresponding metatarsal bones, the way that feet are supposed to look and function. And so just over time, using the toe spacer in a weight-bearing situation, walking, standing, running, living, the toes will get realigned, and there's a whole host of great things that happen in response to that.
For instance, just getting the big toe back in line with the first metatarsal helps our main foot arch, the medial longitudinal arch, to support itself. So then you don't need something like an orthotic propping it up, or you don't need shoes propping it up, because it's just that arch is functioning like it's supposed to, like a strong arch is supposed to. So, helps the toe bones, the phalanges all bear their fair share of the weight so that the pressure's not all going right into the ball of the foot. Now you've got, all your toes participating. A flat surface helps the heel to participate. So like Dr. Marty said, the toe spacer has been immensely helpful. And then the other big piece of that is the footwear and what shoe you put it in. Because if you put a toe spacer on and try to jam your feet into these already too narrow cycling shoes, that's not going to work. It's not going to be comfortable, and it's going to be counterproductive. So we try to get folks into footwear that's completely flat from heel to toe, that's widest at the ends of the toes so that the toes can splay. It's lightweight and flexible and that sort of thing. It's one of the many reasons we're so thrilled about your pedals is because it allows folks to wear foot-healthy footwear instead of cycling shoes, traditional cycling shoes. So now folks can get their toes splayed, get their feet on a flat surface, and they can use their foot the way they're supposed to. I just don't want to get too far off track here. So the things that can help folks is, toe spacers, and then just footwear that's widest at the ends of the toes and flat and allows their toes to splay and allows the foot to function like it's supposed to. Metatarsal pads can also be helpful to help reduce the pressure, pinpoint pressure on the metatarsal heads.
To be honest, I find that stuff like really fascinating, because before I had started digging into your website, like I wasn't really aware that that like toe spacers and those things existed. And I've seen a lot of, like I said, people whose feet have literally changed shape, and their toes just aren't lined up correctly. And you can just see how it affects how the rest of their foot moves. And
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? It's like almost everyone who wears shoes has at least some degree of this deformity that you're talking about. You know, obviously, many people it's very severe, and some people it's not so much, but it affects almost everyone in some way.
And James, I would say cyclists, including mountain bikers, are probably among the most hard hit by this, just because of the amount of time that's spent in these toe-deforming types of footwear. And maybe only rock climbers and, you know, folks who spend a lot of time in soccer cleats and things like that are worse off. The cyclists, yeah, tend to get hit really hard.
Oh, well, runners, dancers who wear...
Dancers also,
you know,
yeah.
Like absolutely. That ballet dancers. I mean, cyclists are definitely way affected by this just because of the footwear.
And the amount of time, like most people's rides are ranging from, you know, an hour and a half to 4 or 5 hours sometimes.
So. Yeah, the amount of weight bearing you're doing. And
So make sure you got good footwear and proper support for the foot. And that's kind of one of the things that, you know, I have to explain to people, because they equate a stiff-soled shoe with a pedal that's long enough to support like your foot, like the platform that you're pressing into supporting your foot, versus there being nothing under your foot and a stiff-soled shoe, and how that's not, you know, they look at it and they're like, well, your foot's being supported by something stiff, but it's not necessarily the same thing. There's so much. I think probably out of all of the sports I've been involved with, like cycling is still in the dark ages when it comes to foot health and foot function.
And you are so right about that. Running and hiking is starting to change, and cycling, it's still all the same misconceptions that I know you know well, you know, that we need to be in these stiff shoes, that we, you know, need to be clipped in to be efficient. So many perceptions out there about that.
I can never get past is the basic movement principle that if your foot doesn't come off of what it's in contact with, you want to keep the whole foot on the ground so you can have a strong, stable arch and drive force through that strong, stable arch. If your foot comes off of what it's in contact with, then you are pushing through the ball of the foot to you know, literally jump to break contact with the ground. Like that's just a basic movement principle. I mean, would you guys agree with that? I mean, that's kind of just movement 101, yeah?
Oh, that's a fundamental concept.
Absolutely.
Fundamental. Yeah, it's 101. But you talk to a cycling coach about this, and you just see like a blank stare, like they've never even heard of this. It's never even crossed their mind, been introduced into their mind that the lower leg functions in two different ways. And then all of a sudden it's defensive mode. It's not like curiosity and like, huh, well, this is new. What's here? It's like, well, this is why cycling is different. That's probably one of the biggest problems that we have with cycling. I tell people all the time, like the biggest lie of the cycling, you know, industry ever got us to believe was that riding a bike is quote unquote different, because it allows them this kind of catch all excuse to like not have to answer tough questions about science and movement principles and stuff like that, because they act like just because you throw your leg over a bike, all of a sudden all bets are off. Everything that we know is out the window, and we're just starting from scratch because being on a bike is somehow different. And it drives me absolutely insane to see people. It's like, how do you make it through college, you know, high level degree certifications, and you've never even been introduced to this concept? It's just mind numbing to me. But anyways, I don't mean to go on one of my rants, but it's dark age when you're talking about how the foot functions and foot health, because just no one understands that basic movement principle right there and how it applies to the bike, and that's why you know, you're not wanting to be on the ball of the foot. And once you change that, like, everything else changes. So, but yeah. Sorry, I was kind of like going off on a tangent there. But you guys may have some insights on that. I don't know what's your views on that.
Well, first of all, I'll say that it sounds very familiar because we encounter a lot of, you know, resistance in the foot health community about some of the concepts and ideas that we talk about.
And including in the medical community and,
Yeah, no, I know you guys don't have a downhill battle for sure. It's an uphill battle with this stuff on a lot of fronts for sure. But, so anyway, sorry.
What's most troubling, I think, is just that lack of curiosity that you mentioned. I think if we all approach things with an open mind, then we can really have a good dialogue about it and maybe make some progress, you know, across the field. And I think that'd be really helpful for everyone.
Yeah, I agree, too, because I think everyone's goal is the same. We all want people's feet to be healthy, and we all want to, you know, do our sports that we love comfortably and injury-free for forever, for as long as possible. I think our goal is the same. So I think it really, for all practitioners to have, you know, some curiosity of, you know, oh, you know, orthotics aren't the number one best way. You know, let's learn more about that. Like, you know, or at least learn more before completely going into defensive mode.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. But no, I totally agree. I think everybody's doing their best. They're doing their best based on the information that they have. And that's where, you know, again, just complimenting what you guys are doing. It's just great to see people who are dedicated to educating people on this, because I don't think people really appreciate it, you know, how much it helps. So so I wanted to actually ask you kind of a random question about footwear, and this is kind of a semi-selfish one, because I'd emailed Marty earlier about looking for some new sandals. And I think that sandals are probably one of those things on the footwear list that a lot of people would be surprised to find out that your traditional kind of flip-flop style sandals have some drawbacks and actually aren't as good for a barefoot, you know, natural foot lifestyle as people may think. So you guys want to touch on that, kind of explain a little bit more about why that is, and then kind of what some of your, what you guys suggest instead?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. Great topic. And we get a lot of questions about this, of course. You know, when the warm weather rolls around, people are wondering about flip-flops and conventional sandals and if they're good or bad and what alternatives there might be. And so we actually have an article on our site entitled "Are Flip-Flops Healthy for Feet?" or something along those lines. And we take the approach that, you know, having any piece of footwear that's flat from heel to toe, flexible in the sole, and that allows the toes to display can be foot healthy, and flip-flops meet that criteria by and large. The issue that a lot of people run into is the toe curling, the grabbing of the toes to try and keep the sandal on, and that can be an issue for people. And so something that we recommend as an alternative, you know, would be something like a Luna type sandal, where you have a heel strap, you know, that secures the heel and you don't have to be grabbing with your toes all the time. That can be really helpful for folks.
Okay. So kind of like the old school Teva sandals. I always remember those from like back in high school. It's like, mm-hmm. Those things are cool. But yeah, so, and you guys, again, on your site, and I want to, you know, might be a good kind of segue into this for the site. Like, when people go to your site, you got a lot of information listed there. And so, for example, like with the sandal recommendations, you know, kind of what do you suggest is like a like the best way for people to use your site? You know, they go to naturalfootgear.com and they want to, you know, learn more or kind of find out what would be the best sandals for them or whatever. I mean, what do you suggest for people going to your site? Kind of the easiest way to find answers to their questions.
Well, the site's really, it's like a two-pronged site, so it's part education and then part e-commerce. So we have a lot of resources on the site dedicated to various topics on natural foot health. So you can search in multiple places for specific topics. We have categories like certain foot conditions that we discuss, you know, certain regions of the lower body that we focus on. and then just topics of interest. So we have a whole blog dedicated to these educational topics.
Yeah, and just to be a bit more specific about that, you know, I think a lot of folks come to our site because they are experiencing some form of foot pain. Maybe they've gotten a diagnosis like plantar fasciosis or bunions or neuromas or something like that. And so those people might come to our site and search specifically for the condition that they've been diagnosed with. What is it? What causes it? And how can I fix it? And all those resources are available on our site. It's just, it's basically what we have told our patients, strategies to fix specific diagnoses or foot problems. Other people may come to the site without a diagnosis, but just, that their heel hurts or that the ball of their foot hurts for some reason. And that's also something that they can search on our site for, different reasons that their heel might hurt, different reasons that the ball of their foot may hurt, or different things they can do to strengthen the foot. So it's we have articles, videos, all these things. And so we hope that people come to our site and just get the information that they need and see, just read it over and see if they think it can help them. As far as the product side, we offer on the site products that we've seen be helpful for our patients that kind of support the philosophical treatment approach that we use. It's all stuff that we personally use ourselves. And so folks can shop for the products that we've found to be helpful for patients and customers and to decide for themselves if they think that that'll be right for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just want to reiterate that, the information we have on our site is a reflection of our personal experience and what we've found to be helpful for most people most of the time. And we certainly recognize that people, all have various and different foot health histories and are coming to this from a different angle and at a certain phase of their care, So we understand that there's different backgrounds coming to the site and getting information. And we just try and offer, the general information that we've found to be most helpful based on our experience.
Right.
And then we let folks kind of make up their minds in terms of what they think might work for them, based on everything they've learned.
Right. Or they can bring the information if they're working with a healthcare practitioner or a coach or something like that, they can bring this information to their practitioner and just chat about it. See if, see if it's appropriate for them specifically for what's going on.
Yeah. So what are some of the common things that you think that people, they're told, okay, you have this problem with plantar fascia, or again, you have to, I'm going to keep calling it plantar fasciitis because I'm not.
That's what it's commonly called. It's fine.
Yeah. So anyways, I guess what are some of the common things that people think are like, okay, this is an issue that's afflicting me that really could be attributed to foot health?
Gosh, it pretty much goes right across the board. Most things that people go into a podiatrist clinic or a chiropractor's clinic or the body worker's clinic for as it concerns their feet can usually be addressed via what we call shoe therapy and getting the toes spread out. There's a lot of crossover between conditions ranging from bunions to, various types of crooked toes to heel pain to, even a lot of knee pain. A lot of that can be addressed simply via, changing the footwear, getting people into footwear that allows the foot to flex and bend and articulate the way nature intended, basically getting foot into footwear that stays out of the way of the foot.
In other words, some of the solutions, it's kind of a solution to a... There's a wide range of problems that people have with their feet and their lower extremity, but what's kind of neat is that the solution to all these different problems can actually be the same or similar. So a lot of times it does come back to the same, changing the footwear to doing stretches and exercise to strengthen the feet to, all these things kind of surrounding getting the foot strong on its own to function as nature always intended it to.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a neat common thread that kind of runs throughout all these various conditions. And So yeah, getting into appropriate footwear, doing the appropriate exercises and stretches, and that varies from person to person too. So there's some individuality that that goes into it there. And you're spending a little time barefoot to the extent that you can and building up your own inherent foot strength. It's all about rehabilitating the foot. And that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
James, did we answer your question or did we kind of...
No, for sure. I'm kind of, I know some of my questions are a little open-ended as well. So, you guys are that was, actually, I kind of wanted you guys to dig in a little bit more to what you were touching on there at the end as far as things that people can do to start, rehabilitating their feet. And so, I guess, someone's listening to this, they're like, all right, yeah, I'm going to try it, check it out, go to the website, see what's up. But, what would be, kind of the top, 3 to 5 things that you recommend to your patients or, people who are like, okay, I want to get into this and I want to do it right. What would you, what would you recommend that I do?
Okay, that's a great, yeah. That's such a good question. Okay, so I'll kind of say a few. Maybe Marty, you'll want to say a few as well.
Yeah, and I throw out 3 to 5, but feel free if you guys end up more. Like that's fine. I just tell me. Give us your advice.
Okay. All right. I think there are 2 exercises that almost everyone can benefit from. And that you can do at home with no material starting right now. And so one of them is we'll call a big toe stretch. So for most people who have worn shoes their whole lives, their big toe is starting to go toward their second toe. What you might call a hallux abducto valgus is the technically, or maybe a bunion configuration, but you can picture this, right? Big toes moving toward the second toe, and you may even see kind of a protrusion at the base of the big toe there. So something that can help the big toe get back into alignment is by just gently stretching it away from the second toe. So you can put a little counter pressure at the base of your big toe, kind of where the, if someone has a bunion, for instance, where the bump is, you just put a gentle counter pressure there and then you gently stretch your big toe away from your second toe, from the rest of your toes, straight out. And if anyone needs to see a demo of this, we've got videos and articles on our website. You can do this on yourself. You can have a partner help you out. Super gentle thing you can do, but it just helps strengthen the muscle, the abductor hallucis muscle, which is the muscle that moves your big toe away. And then it helps stretch out the adductor hallucis. That's the muscle that's moving the big toe toward the second toe. It helps stretch that out so that it's a bit, short story long, it's rebalancing the musculature around your big toe. So big toe stretch. That's
okay.
Another one is a stretch for the muscles on the top of the foot, the toe extensor muscles. So these are the muscles that are on the top of the foot that go from the toes and they go all the way up into the shin. And these are usually really tight for people, again, just from a lifetime of footwear and other things. A way to help stretch those muscles out, and also kind of feels good too, is to curl your toes underneath your body. Like while you're in a seated position, you can curl your toes under and then just gently apply pressure. This is easier to see than to describe, but it's something that folks can do, while you're eating or while you're chatting, on the phone, watching TV, whatever, just doing that for 30 seconds on both feet. So I'd say those are 2 good ones. Third one is being really careful how you shop for footwear. I'm going to let you talk about that, Doug.
Yeah. So the nice thing about feet is that they are super resilient and in a lot of cases super responsive to being rehabilitated. And the cool thing is that you can rehabilitate your foot basically with every step you take, provided that you're in the appropriate footwear and your foot's in the right configuration. And so, as Dr. Robin said, a lot of that is finding the the right footwear. So knowing how to shop for footwear, finding shoes, and that includes cycling shoes.
Includes any shoe.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cycling shoes, walking shoes, running shoes, house slippers, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so footwear that's flat, and we say flat, it means flat from heel to toe. It's a term that's been popularized recently called zero drop. So no difference in height of your heel, you know, between your heel and the rest of your foot. And shoes that are flexible in the sole. You should be able to bend your shoe, fold it, twist it quite easily. A shoe like that is going to allow your foot to become strong on its own. A lot of footwear has really rigid soles, and that is basically like a cast for your foot. So, you know, when we cast the body part, it tends not to become stronger, and the same goes for feet. And so the other thing we look for in footwear is a wide toe box. When we say wide toe box, we mean a toe box that's widest at the ends of the toes and not necessarily at the ball of the foot, like what most people think of when they think of a wide toe box shoe. So it's a different looking silhouette for a shoe. It's more kind of like a, I don't know, you call it maybe a spade type configuration.
Well, no, it's the opposite of a spade.
Well, a spade flipped around.
Oh, a spade flipped around.
Yeah.
So the idea that the shoe needs to be wide at the ball of the foot and then continue to actually get even wider as you go toward the end of the shoe. So some people might call that like a clown. It kind of looks a little bit like a clown shoe in a way. We're not used to seeing that. But, yeah. But that is actually how our feet are
McDonald's
shaped. Here. Yeah, it's how our feet are shaped. It's how they function best. So just and it does. I mean, and footwear like this doesn't have to look like a clown shoe. I don't mean that literally, but
yeah. No, I know what you mean.
But yeah, wide at the ends of the toes. I think that's the. So to summarize, shopping for footwear that's completely flat from heel to toe, that's lightweight, flexible, widest at the ends of the toes.
Yeah, something that's not built up. It doesn't try and control your ankle motion.
No bump, like, you know, people call arch support, which is usually not necessarily supporting your arch, but no, you know, bumps underneath the arch, just flat so that the foot can just support itself.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask us, well, how do I know if the footwear is wide enough for my foot? And so a simple trick to do is when you're shopping, just pull out the shoe's liner if it has one, stand on that. If any part of your foot or toes are hanging off the margins of the liner or outside the margins of the liner, that may be an indication that shoe is not wide enough for your foot.
Yeah.
And so that's just something easy to do, a quick test.
If the shoe doesn't have a liner or a footbed, you can also just flip the shoe over and stand on the sole with, you know, left foot on top of the right shoe. Same thing. You can kind of see, oh, geez, are my toes hanging over the side? If so, you know, you can see before your eyes what the shoe would be doing to your foot while you're in it.
Yeah, and so we usually recommend people to, you know, if they have the toe spacers, take those with them when they're shoe shopping, put them on, and then use that foot configuration to see if the liner is an appropriate width.
Okay.
So yeah, shoe therapy, really important. Can't state too much how important that is. It's fundamental. And I think, yeah, spending some time barefoot, too, on surfaces that are agreeable for your feet, getting your feet built up, accustomed to functioning on their own, that's really important, and you can just build that time up gradually.
Yeah, I mean, for some folks who don't spend much time barefoot, or a lot of folks, it may hurt to go barefoot. When you say spend time barefoot, at first, that may be 5 minutes, that may be 30 seconds, you know, but slowly building that up over time. Which kind of segues into another tip that I have for people. Any of these changes, we recommend that people do slowly. Slowly and progressively. Can't overemphasize that enough. Sometimes folks hear some of this stuff and they get super excited and they're like, I'm going to go buy minimalist footwear and I'm going to go run a marathon. I do not recommend this.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that. That was going to be a question of mine. So yeah, keep going. Yeah, what keep your recommendations for people getting into it? Because I think that's very important. Like you said, people think more is better, and they end up getting turned off to this concept because of poor application. not necessarily because the concept's not valid. So yeah, please continue with your recommendations there.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right. At the best, people may say, you know, get turned off by it, and the worst, people may actually get injured if they go too fast. So neither scenario is good. It's so just slow, progressive changes. You know, if somebody's wearing a toe spacer, for instance, we usually suggest doing it for maybe half an hour to an hour the first day, and then maybe adding half an hour to an hour each day. Or depending on what, you know, what, how their feet and body's responding, none of this should hurt. You may have a little bit of soreness, you may feel a little different, but none of this should be painful. So we really just recommend going slowly, listening to your body, listening to your feet, because your feet are going to feel different, your whole body's going to feel a little different. So just, slow.
Yeah, James, yeah. I want to say too, a lot of people when they find us are quite excited by the idea of natural approach. A lot of people are coming to us because they have tried just a ton of other things and maybe stuff hasn't quite worked for them the way that they had hoped. And this is a new approach. And so people tend to be very excited about it and eager to jump into things. And we kind of have to rein people in a little bit.
Yeah.
And just to do that progressive stepwise approach. We actually have a really great article on our site called How to Transition to Minimalist Shoes.
Oh, perfect.
That folks should check out if they're interested in doing that. And that kind of just gives folks a stepwise process, a procedure for how to make that transition.
Yeah, sometimes I say, you know, we all hear, you know, oftentimes, no pain, no gain. Oh, that yeah. is not true for this at all. There no. should be a... pain is not gain. It should be no pain, all gain is what we're going for here. It should be a comfortable process, but it is slow. And, you know, sometimes we remind folks too, you know, some of these chronic foot deformities, things like bunions and hammer toes and heel pain and all this stuff. It took a long time, sometimes decades, for these problems to form. So the solution isn't overnight either. It's a slow progressive approach. It's definitely the healthy and effective way to do it, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've seen the same thing in my facility. People come in and got like bad, you know, movement issues or whatever, you know, old injuries, and it's like, yeah, man, this didn't happen overnight. It's not going to get fixed overnight, but I think, you know, still on the flip side of that, I think, you know, it's also important to kind of let people know that, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to notice changes. Like, you know, I would assume that people will probably start noticing positive changes and seeing the impact of this stuff, you know, relatively quickly. But it may take, you know, years or something until it's fully, you know, taken care of and to the point where it's not an issue anymore. Is that a fair statement?
That's been our experience, James. Same thing. A lot of people, I'd say a lot of people experience some positive effect right away, or within days or weeks, some positive effect. But yeah, exactly as you said, something that's taken many years to form is probably going to take months or years to fully go away.
Right.
But reduction in pain can happen for a lot of people fairly quickly.
Yeah. But, I guess that's kind of my point. Is like it's not like you're not going to see anything, and then all of a sudden one day, like years down the road, all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, everything's fixed. It's like, no, you're gonna be benefiting and seeing. Like, yeah, it may be a long journey to the end, but man, it's an enjoyable journey because you are actually benefiting along the way. Which is something. It's that fine line, because you do have to be honest with people about, like, hey, it's not going to happen overnight. But just being honest, that a lot of people get discouraged with that and say, but you will see something. You know what I mean? It's not like it's not worth the journey. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. Keeping the long view with that stuff is definitely important. And so keep people from getting hurt and also from getting too discouraged. I've been doing a lot of BJJ lately, so Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu kind of drills that into your head. You walk in day one, they're like, it's going to be 10 years before you figure out what's going on here, man. And it's like, ah, damn.
Yeah.
So it gives you that long view from day one, whereas, you know, it's, a lot of our culture doesn't encourage that. It's like, man, if I don't see results in 4 to 6 weeks, like, this ain't worth it. And it's like, you know, not quite it. But
yeah, I think it's also important to coach people about outcome markers and, you know, maybe do like a pain rating early on and then, or, you know, some other objective measure and then come back to that 4 to 6 weeks down the line. And a lot of people don't really realize the progress they're making either, because it happens over, you know, over a period of time. It can be interesting for people to come back and do some of these objective measures and to see their own progress. Maybe if they haven't even felt that they've been making that kind of progress, it definitely reminds them that yes, they are experiencing some foot health gains.
All right. So for example, I know sometimes, you know, when we see a patient initially, you know, we may ask them, you know, okay, so on a scale from 0 to 10, how much pain are you experiencing? And they'll say, okay, an 8. And then let's say if they're a runner, we'll say, okay, how long can you run before you start having knee pain? They'll say, oh, a mile, you know, and these are great things to just note, because sometimes you'll have folks come in 6 months later and they'll say, well, I don't know if I'm really better. I'm like, okay, well, it's, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, where are you at? They'll say, oh, you know, I'm a 4. I'll say, oh, okay, well, that's, you know, used to be an 8, you know. And they're like, okay, how long are you running before you start to have problems? And like, oh, well, now that you mention it, actually, I don't have that, you know, I mean, I can go maybe 6 miles now, or actually, that I forgot about that knee pain or something like we're funny creatures. We forget just how bad it, well, you know, when things get better slowly, we kind of forget how bad it was. So it's kind of nice to have that reminder too. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah. I am doing better.
Yeah. And I find the same thing with stuff. So, well, cool. I know, we've been chatting here for a bit. I want to make sure I get a little bit more specific with cycling and riding, and definitely want to hear your guys' feedback on you know, on that side of things. So again, the traditional view for most cyclists is that they need to be in clipless pedals and they need to be on the ball of their foot, and you guys obviously have some different, you know, views on that based on your understanding of the foot and foot function. So, you know, what do you guys recommend as far as cycling footwear and pedals and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I guess first let's focus on the Catalyst pedal. Just a total game changer for us. Really love testing it out, putting it to the test. It really meshes well with our foot health philosophy, the whole idea of natural arch support, getting the being able to recruit the full power and strength of your...
Yeah, I mean,
we haven't been able to do with any other pedal.
Yeah, I'll say, well, we've learned a lot from you, James. Marty and I have been cyclists for a long time now. And say I've been cycling for about 18 years now, and Marty, about the same for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, we've been cycling for almost 2 decades. And, you know, when I started working with Dr. McClanahan, which is coming up on 10 years ago now, that was, of course, one of my questions, too, is like, what about cycling? You know, I'm learning all these foot health concepts, but what about cycling? You know, and at the time, we're like, well, you know, cycling shoes are really bad, but what can we do? And so, you know, we were doing all these things like slicing and dicing the cycling shoes, trying to take the heel elevation out, trying to open up the toe box as best we could, trying to, you know, put metatarsals in there. There's actually an article on our website where it's called Cycling Shoe Surgery.
I've seen that one, yeah.
You've seen it? Okay, so yeah, so I had my CD shoes, which Dr. Ray and I just took a scalpel to and took a hacksaw to, and all these things, trying to open up the toe box, trying to flatten it out, and just trying to make it work as best we can. And that's kind of... what we've been doing is trying to hodgepodge together solutions for incorporating our own concepts of foot health into cycling. So we were really excited to meet you and learn about Catalyst pedals, because you're all giving us a way to have that flat surface, wear a shoe that allows us to wear a toe spacer, allows the toes to spread out and beyond all those. Sudden, you know, use our heavy hitting muscles to actually have a more efficient, better pedal stroke.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry, I'm like chatting so much that I'm off track here.
No, it's great.
So yeah, so that's what it was before, was, you know, like trying to just make our cycling shoes work. What we're doing now is we're using, your pedal, the Catalyst pedal, which is just, what's so awesome, everybody, about, James Catalyst pedal is that it's so long. So you get your heel bone and your ball of foot, you get your both ends of your arch, on the pedal. So now you don't need a fancy carbon cycling specific shoe. You actually, the pedal is the awesome support surface, and then you can recruit the full power of your foot and all the muscles attached to it, using a nice wide toe box flat shoe. So I guess, so in terms of cycling and foot health, what we're doing is we're using Catalyst pedal. We have we're using a Topo shoe, which is just, you know, same deal, flat, wide toe box. We've got metatarsal pads in our shoes. We wear toe spacers while we pedal. It's been super awesome, I'd say. Cycling more comfortably than ever, no knee problems, lots of power.
Yeah, it's just so nice getting off the bike after a 3-hour ride and just being completely fresh. You know, not having any pain. No injuries.
I'll back up and say before even I learned about all this foot stuff, hot spots, numbness, and knee pain were absolutely, I thought that was just part of cycling. That was part of the deal. And that's just something you deal with. And it's going to get worse as you get older. And you just kind of keep dealing with it. I never experience these things anymore. And I now realize nobody should.
No.
That's not part of cycling. That's not inevitable. That's,
Yeah, it's common, but it's not normal.
Exactly. So, it's really cool incorporating all these, you know, general natural foot health concepts. They work beautifully in cycling, and it's the same deal in cycling. Just, letting the foot function like how it's supposed to, with the toe spread out, flat, strong support surface in the pedal, allows an excellent, great amount of power and a great amount of comfort.
Yeah, the real revelation for me with the Catalyst pedals is climbing. We have a lot of hills around the Asheville area, a lot of climbs here.
Well, mountains. They're technically mountains.
We'll call them mountains, yeah. it's really great being up out of the saddle, having that co-contraction that happens at the bottom of the pedal stroke. I think it's just so healthy for knees and just so much more power for me personally and what I've noticed. Climbing is just, it's really fun. It's really fun on the Catalyst pedals. And the whole experience of cycling on the road is just elevated, in my opinion, by using the Catalyst pedals.
And you guys use them a lot on the road. That's really interesting. I mean, you guys have obviously had a good experience with them in that role.
Oh, absolutely. And it's an interesting thing because, as you probably know, road cyclists are so resistant to the idea.
What do you mean?
road cyclists think you have to be clipped in. You must be clipped in. That's the only way to be efficient. You're not, and I think that's true in mountain biking too. You can speak to this more, but it's not as far a stretch to go back to a flat pedal for mountain bikers as it is for road cyclists.
No, it's definitely a stranger scene to see a roadie on flats, which is one of the things, to be honest with you, that I love the most about the Catalyst is that it's the only flat that's infiltrated the road riding scene on any level. You know what I mean? And it's not a huge level, it's not big, but just the fact that there's, riders like yourself that are very, you take your riding seriously and you take your performance seriously, and the fact that you're still using these pedals and finding benefit from them and that they're flat, I find fascinating because, yeah, like you said, that is one of the most orthodox branches of the cycling world by far, and so that's why I kind of wanted to have you kind of touch on it, because I just love the fact that you're doing that. But like you're saying, it is tough to introduce them to new ideas.
It is, and I think you do such a great job on your website talking about, you know, just just kind of the misconception of the upstroke. And you know, I think, you know, road cyclists believe the upstroke is just so important for efficiency, and I think you do such a nice job of challenging that notion. And I would say any road cyclists out there, even if it sounds crazy to not be clipped in, try it. Just try it. And I personally would never go back to a clipless pedal now. And I was in clipless pedals for, again, a few decades almost. So that's a pretty big statement, but I am so much more comfortable and so much more powerful in a flat pedal.
For safety purposes too, yeah. James, I can't tell you already how many times being on the catalyst have saved my skin from close calls with traffic and sliding, skidding on the road. And I've been able to stay upright on occasions where I probably would have gone down otherwise hard on the pavement. Yeah. So I want to thank you for that, because it's very personally meaningful.
And another bit of fun too is when we go on group rides with folks. Well, there's a few bits of fun. One of them is folks see us in the flat pedals and they think, these are not real cyclists. And we're not racers or anything like that. I don't feel like I've lost a bit. In fact, I feel like I've just gained in efficiency and power. So, and usually people are able to see that, as they kind of assume that maybe we're not going to do that well, and we do end up doing pretty well, I think. So I think that's cool for people to see, of just like, wait, you can do that on a flat pedal, and like, yeah, absolutely, yes, you can.
Showing people what's possible.
Yeah, and
then change your mindset a little bit.
And the other bit of fun is at the end of the ride. Cyclists, they go to their car if they have shoes nearby. The first thing they do is kick off their cycling shoes and put on flip flops or Crocs or something like that. We don't need to. Our feet are comfortable on the bike, off the bike. We just get off our bikes and start walking around, and our feet feel as good at the end as they did at the beginning. So I think it's kind of cool for other people to see that too. Like, oh, gee, you don't need to kick off your shoes and massage your miserable feet right away, you know?
Yeah, limping around for a few minutes afterwards, yeah. Yeah, that was the comfort thing, to be honest with you, was a complete side effect. I mean, I had no idea when I designed the pedals that was going to be part of it, but as a riding regular flats, I even tried to get a midfoot position on those, but I realized, your foot's going to seek some sort of stability, and so it's going to cheat to one end of the arch or the other if you can't connect them both. And so it's really tough. Like, you can't really achieve a true midfoot position, and even if you did, it's not comfortable for your foot, because it's just kind of like mashed around the foot. And so I always, even though I try to go midfoot, I'd always have, just a little bit to the ball of the foot, and just that little bit of forward tipping motion. And it wasn't until my second or third ride that I realized, like, holy crap, man, I haven't had my toes go numb in a while. And I really started to pay attention to it, and I was like, whoa, that's crazy. And as I started thinking about it, it's like, oh, that makes sense. I'm not jamming my toes forward into the toe box. I've got, better, my foot's able to relax, and all of these things that the comfort thing was kind of this unintended side effect. But yeah, when you're late into a ride, your feet still feel great, and you can still, stand up and hammer a climb or whatever, and people who are in their tight little clipless pedal shoes are supposed to be technically more efficient, but their feet are killing them, so they can't,
Right.
You know what I mean? This is one of those factors that doesn't really get talked about. When you're measuring things in a lab, things like comfort over the course of a multi-hour ride don't really get factored in, but they are a factor for us, and they're a big factor in a lot of different ways. But it's funny, man. That comfort thing was an interesting unintended side effect, but one thing that I get probably more people talk about, that, like, just how much more comfortable their feet are during and after rides than before. So it's great to hear you guys are experiencing that as well.
If that was an unintended thing, James, that's a huge one. Comfort and longevity, I think, is something that you've really given to the cycling world. And
yeah, it's a big quality of consideration.
Yeah, that's great, man. No, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, not just for people listening. I mean, we didn't arrange that beforehand. That was great.
Yeah, check the mail.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love to hear feedback like that because it's everything that I think as well as far as like, man, this is an answer to a bad solution. Like the cycling world has had a poorly thought out bad solution to foot position and pedal stroke forced on it for a while, and the catalyst pedal, you know, I tell people like it's a manifestation of the truth about foot position and pedal stroke on the bike. And so like for me, like it's like that's what makes it more of a mission than a product, because I know that everybody that's riding that is going to get to experience like, oh, this is what your foot is supposed to be doing on your bike. This is what my body's supposed to be doing on my bike. And it's exciting. I'm just really pumped to hear you guys pump on it, and it gets me excited about it. But so what again, I know you mentioned real briefly, but what shoes are you guys using when you ride your bikes?
So right now, Dr. Robin mentioned earlier in the podcast that we're using a Topo, a company called Topo, started by Tony Post, who is featured in Born to Run.
Okay.
And so he's created a line of athletic shoes that we find pretty conducive to cycling. Actually, the model that we're using is called the Sante. It's discontinued now, but it's got a boa closure system, so that's kind of cool. It kind of looks like a cycling shoe, but it's actually an athletic shoe. So we found that to be a pretty good option for us.
That is by no means the only shoe that you can use. Actually, yeah, again, one of the cool things about Catalyst pedals is you can use pretty much any athletic shoe, I think, you know, and of course you have the luxury of looking for something that's a wide toe box and flat and all that. So, but yeah, so suggestions for people, just to take suggestions from our site, you know, we have a couple of models of Ultra footwear, I think an Ultra can work well for a lot of folks. I think, it's not technically an athletic shoe, but I think a Lens shoe can work well. I think
Zero has some good athletic shoes.
Yeah, I think anything that's flat from heel to toe with a wide toe box and is comfortable can work well for folks.
Nice. Yeah, that's good. I think that one of the things that I don't, one of my gripes, many gripes with the cycling industry, is that the flat pedal shoe specific companies all treat flat pedal riders like we're all 20 something year old downhillers who want to wear skate shoes so we can go kick it with our homies at the coffee shop after ripping a gnar. And you know, so you get the shoe choices are really poor. Like the main company 510 that makes, you know, they have the best the sticky rubber, the Stealth sticky rubber, but their shoe choices aren't that great, especially for people that kind of do more trail riding and cross country riding. And so I like that you guys are giving people options like, hey, you know, you don't have to wear some shoes that you can probably use both on and off the bike. And, you know, it'll be good for your feet, just kind of open people's minds. I don't think people think about using athletic shoes when it comes to pedaling. But, yeah, like you guys mentioned, another thing that I realized was, you know, a lot of the sticky rubber, the need for the sticky rubber on the shoes was from the unbalanced forces going into the pressure, going into the pedals, and that your foot was literally like trying to kick off of the pedal every time you pedaled or stood up. And so you needed that super sticky rubber. And so, you know, yeah, I found that, you know, I can jump on those bad boys and flip flops and, which I'm not going to have much longer, Dr. Marty, before I'm going to get my good, Sam here. but anyways, you know, that was, you know, I can jump on those and whatever, and your feet are strong and stable. In fact, I was joking with someone the other day. I was like, I'm not totally serious because, you know, my toes would get pissed off of me, but I probably would rather ride my bike in sandals and Catalyst pedals than normal flats and 510s. I feel like my foot would be more stable and would perform better that way because of the you know, once you get your foot stabilized with the platform, then everything changes. But So cool. Yeah, well, those are great recommendations. And like I said, it's good for me because then I can point people, because I get people all the time asking me what shoes I recommend. And so I can start pointing people to some of those recommendations as well. So it's good for me to know. So so cool. Thanks for sharing that knowledge there.
Oh yeah, that is kind of a fun thing to tell people is you don't need a cycling shoe to cycle. You know, it's kind of a new idea, I think, for a lot of people. Well, don't I need a cycling shoe to cycle if I'm serious? You really don't need a cycle, something marketed as a cycling shoe. You don't need that. It just opens up so many options. It's kind of great.
There's a lot of marketing when it comes to footwear and having specific types of footwear for specific activities. And sometimes that's unavoidable. You do need that specialized footwear, but you can run in a lot of different kinds of shoes. Dr. McClanahan, he did the Portland Marathon in Crocs a few years back. It's just kind of to prove the point, you know, that you can do a lot of activities in what we consider maybe, you know, casual or other types of footwear.
Right.
Yeah. Break down the
process.
And so, yeah, same thing in cycling.
Yeah. No, that's good. Just, it's more, it's not really like, you know, it's more footwear that allows your foot to function properly and if that's doing its job and you condition it well, you know, especially specifically for the task. But I think that's one of the things with like running, you know, like, yeah, you got to kind of condition your foot to that. But yeah, once you've done it, man, the foot can, it's an amazing structure. Like you touched on it earlier I think it's kind of a profound thing. Like, you know, what is your worldview? Is it that the foot is inherently flawed and we have to fix it, or that the foot is, you know, inherently, you know, great and we have to figure out how to let it do its thing? And it's just, I don't think people a lot of times even think about like, oh yeah, like that's a paradigm. Like, I mean, I haven't realized that my paradigm is that the foot is broken and I have to fix it. And that's why I'm always looking for, you know, these different solutions. But there's a different way to look at the problem and let the foot do its thing. And, you know, to me, I think it's an empowering message for people, because it's like, man, no, like you have the power. You have, like, you don't have to rely on these external things to let you do what you want to do. Like, you can do it, man, and here's how to do it. So, again, I think that's what's great about your guys' message and what you're doing with the whole, you know, natural foot health thing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, and it's, you know, I mean, the thing is that's interesting, too, is, you know, nobody necessarily has to take our word for it. Much has been written about this, but it's, you know, so like you said, we kind of do all grow up with this idea of, you know, our foot's flawed and you need to fix it. But what's interesting is if we, there are a lot of parts of the world where people don't wear shoes or wear just, you know, flip-flops or minimalist shoes and so on. And, you know, parts of Asia, Africa, South America and so on, and, you know, India, the subcontinent and that sort of thing. I guess if it were true that feet are flawed and they need to be supported and we need good arch support and we need good sturdy soles and all this stuff. And if we didn't do that, our feet would break down. If that were true, then these other parts of the world that I'm talking about, you know, Asia, South America, you know, so on, all the entire populations of people would have feet that are crippled. I mean, they, you know, their feet wouldn't work at all because they haven't been doing any of that stuff. So we would think that, you know, it must be riddled with foot problems. But and again, much has been written about this and observed about this. But what we find is the opposite's true. Folks that wear minimalist or no footwear, they have some of the healthiest feet on the planet. They don't have, you know, plantar fasciosis, heel pain, bunions, crooked toes, things like you almost don't see it at all.
We've been really fortunate to spend some time in South Asia and specifically in Nepal on some of the trekking trails there, and seeing what the porters are wearing on their feet. It's kind of very educational and mind-blowing for a lot of Westerners who are coming in and doing some of these treks and just, you know, either no footwear or just a pair of, you know, simple flip-flops or other types of minimalist footwear that these folks are wearing, and they're carrying these huge loads up these incredible hills, you know, for days and days at a time, and that's their livelihood, and that's what they choose to, you know, to use on their feet, and it really works for them. And I think the big problem here is that we live in a society where the image of what's normal when it comes to feet and how feet are supposed to look and function no longer exists. Like, we don't see feet are hidden away. Most people's feet are deformed from using conventional footwear from an early age on. And so we really lack that image of what's normal and healthy, which is very, very much on display, you know, in other parts of the world.
It has
been proven and observed already that that feet are inherently healthy and can stay that way well into old age. That's such a big part of our site, and I know what you do too is just helping people realize that, you know, that and if for anyone who has lost that healthy foot function, I hope that we can give folks hope that you can, in most cases, not all, but most cases, you can get that back if you've lost that healthy foot function. It's for many people, again, the foot's wildly adaptable. It's you can get it back and be pain free and pursue the things you love well into old age. That, I mean, that's our hope for everyone.
Yeah, and I think that's an important important message, man. It is adaptable. Again, something that was touched on earlier by you guys, that the foot, you know, it will learn, it will train, and I'm a big believer in the brain recognizing what I call authentic human movement, you know, and versus like made up gym BS. And but anyway, this is kind of a different subject. But the authentic human movement side of it, you know, like the brain, just the way that it works with the neural pathways that we're born with and we develop as children, it's like, that's the thing, is like your feet aren't learning something new, they're relearning something that they forgot, which is infinitely faster and easier than trying to learn something new. And that, you know, I'm a big believer that your brain recognizes when you start to put your body, because I've seen it time and again with people's mobility, and they were convinced that they'd never be able to, you know, squat properly, they'd never be able to move properly. And just by, you know, challenging their body and forcing the brain to start trying to figure out these movement problems, and it starts tapping into these, you know, latent neural networks that it hasn't been using, but it recognizes it and it wants to do it. So I think the message is, it's just kind of a long way of saying that, like, your body wants this. And when you start to do this, like, it will, your brain will recognize it and it will embrace it. And, you know, you'll start to respond to it and stuff. And so, it's just getting people back to where they were, more than just trying to teach them something new. So anyway, that's kind of how I look at it.
Oh, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. And yeah, just as you said, I think what's neat about it is it just it's easy. You don't have, you know, in a way, it's work, but like you're right, just as you're saying, your body already knows what to do, so you don't have to sit there thinking about, oh, how should I put my foot down? How should I do this? Which is pretty hard to do, to think about it. But what's nice is, yeah, you don't have to. Actually, your body already knows what to do. Once you started on the path, it's just
it's quite intuitive.
It's quite intuitive, yeah. Which is a really great thing to experience.
Yeah. Well, cool. Right on, guys. Well, we've talked about a lot of great things. Appreciate your time so far. What you guys have anything else you want to mention or talk about before I let you guys go on about your day?
Oh boy, we've covered a lot.
Covered a lot of ground. I just want to thank you again for creating a product that allows us to cycle, to rehabilitate our foot with every pedal stroke. Basically, that's it's just such a game changer, and it's a great product for all kinds of cyclists of all ages and abilities. And it's so great to have that and to recommend that to folks who are active and want to be active for the rest of their lives.
Hats off. Or it's just congratulations and thank you.
We know the manufacturing process is not easy either. You know, that's a big deal to go through that and bring a product to market, especially, you know, a product that has so much soul behind it. And thank you again.
No problem. Yeah, it's funny. I tell people, like, man, I went through every step of this process trying to prove myself wrong, because I really didn't want to do it. I didn't want the pedal to work. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't come off the trail and I had that like inspiration for the pedal going, like, all right, I got $1 million idea. It's like, oh man, is this really going to work? I got to try and prove myself wrong. Cause it is an interesting process, but once you see it, once you experience it, you know, it was mind revelation, man. From the first pedal stroke, I was like, oh, okay, this is different. So let's get this out there and see who can help me, or, you know, who's interested. But now I can't thank you guys enough too, because, you know, the Catalyst pedal wouldn't be where it's at today without the grassroots support of people who, you know, people like yourself who are willing to help promote it and spread the word about it. So I appreciate what you guys are doing for it as well. And also, just again, like natural foot health stuff, I hope, you know, people listening to this will go check out your website at naturalfootgear.com and, you know, at least take the time to learn more. You know, like you guys were saying, you got a lot of educational stuff there. So even if no one, you know, buys any shoes or anything like that, at least you can start kind of learning more and see some things you can start doing at home. But I'm a big believer in the foot function. So thanks for what you guys are doing as well.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be able to do what we do, I think, for both of us.
Really, we're really fortunate to be able to do it. So, everybody, the information is there. Please use it if it's helpful.
Yeah, so a few articles on the site. I think we mentioned them in the podcast here, but the How to Transition to Minimalist Shoes is a great one for folks to check out. Cycling Shoe Surgery is another great one on the site. We did a nice review of the Catalyst pedals if people want a little more info about our insights into that and how we use the pedals on the road. They can check that out on our site. We have some
top five exercises for the feet.
Top five exercises for the feet. There's some great videos there. We have free e-courses that people can sign up for. They're a week or 2 week long courses. The emails get dribbled out over time in digestible amounts on various foot health topics, different conditions, some of the myths in the foot health industry that we debunk. And so, yeah, all that stuff's online on our site. And we're happy to answer any questions your listeners might have as well. So,
perfect. Excellent. So besides naturalfootgear.com, any other Facebook, Instagram, where else can they find you guys?
Yes.
Is it all just there? All linked from the site?
Oh, we are on social media. I'll tell you, we're pretty terrible at social media. So, but we are on Facebook and Instagram and
Twitter,
whatever those social medias are. But email is the best way to contact us generally.
Perfect. No, that's I'm the same way. I'm lucky. My wife is into the social media thing, so she helps me out with my stuff, but. Yeah, I'm like the most non-social social media guy sometimes. But I don't know, it's funny. We're just you get busy doing stuff and then forget to check in, and you know, and I've like personally had to take steps to like cut some of that stuff out of my life, you know, because it can eat up so much time trying to be productive.
It's nice to have other ways for folks to reach out and get in touch with you. But for us, email has definitely been the primary method of communication.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, well, go visit the website, hit them up with an email if you got any questions or anything like that. But, well, cool. Yeah, we want to thank you guys again for your time. And, we'll have to have you guys back on and talk some more foot health and cycling and just different stuff, man. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate you guys' time and insights.
Oh, it's been an honor to be here, James. Thanks so much for inviting us and letting us be part of it.
Yeah, total pleasure, James. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. So, for everyone listening, again, thanks for joining me for another Bike James podcast. And, I'll talk to you guys next time.